This is Kids These Days.
I'm Shanna Sheehy, the host of Kids These Days. Today, we're raising awareness. Awareness about the epidemic of domestic violence and sexual assault in our state. Alaska's Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Response Coordinator, Katie Tipas, and Sergeant Cindy Stanton of the Anchorage Police Department both join me in the studio today. Also this hour, we'll learn about legal services accessible locally for people in need, and we'll explore one of the many prevention efforts going on in our state. It's Kids These Days on this listener-supported station. Thanks for listening to Kids These Days. I'm your host, Shanna Sheehy. Today we're in the studio to talk about a very serious issue in our state. The numbers related to domestic violence and sexual assault are staggering. Alaska has the highest rates of sexual assaults against women and children in the country. And in a report released just last week, nearly 59% of women in Alaska report being the victims of sexual violence or intimate partner violence in their lifetimes. Women are hurting, children are hurting, men are hurting, our families are hurting, and we all are hurting as a result of this. So what can be done? What do you think can help? Let us know. Call us at Kids These Days. Call 1-888-583-7234. That's 888-KTD-RADIO. And let us know what you're thinking. Today's calls are not live, and the comments you leave will be used off the air. I'm joined in the studio today by Katie Tipas and Cindy Stanton. Katie is the response coordinator for the governor's new initiative on domestic violence and sexual assault. She has a long history of working in this field in Alaska. Katie, I wanted to say thank you very much for being here with us today.
It's my pleasure.
And also Sergeant Cindy Stanton. She's the head of the Crimes Against Children Unit at the Anchorage Police Department. And in her position as the head of this unit, she responds to child abuse and child sexual abuse cases throughout the city. And she's been with the force for about 16 years. Thanks very much to you too, Cindy, for being with us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and maybe before we get into this conversation too deeply, I can ask you first, Katie, to tell me a little bit about your history of work in this field and what experiences it is that you've had to get you to the position of being this response coordinator now.
I first started working in this field actually when I was in college. I did an internship with Child Protective Services and worked with families who were experiencing violence. Then I moved to Alaska and worked for almost 4 years at the local domestic violence and sexual assault program, now known as IAC, which is Interior Center for Nonviolent Living. In that position, I worked specifically with women who experience violence, also with children, doing direct crisis intervention, and also legal advocacy and working with the community. I then left Alaska and went to graduate school and really missed the state and the uniqueness of Alaska, so I came back. And for 11 years, I worked for the Alaska State Troopers, managing 3 federal grants under the Violence Against Women Act. Those grants were specific to training for law enforcement and responding to domestic violence, sexual assault, child sexual abuse, stalking, and elder abuse. And then I most recently was hired into the position of the response coordinator in the governor's office.
And how about you, Cindy? Tell me a little bit about some of the experiences you have that led you to the position that you have now with the Anchorage Police Department.
Okay. Well, I started out as a patrol officer with the department, and after about 5 years went into detectives. I had the good fortune of getting into the Crimes Against Children unit and spent about 4 years there. Really enjoyed the unit and always wanted to come back, even though I got promoted as a sergeant, and went back to the street, went and was the community council liaison sergeant for a couple of years, and there was an opening, and I went back to the Crimes Against Children unit, and just the real innocent victims is where I like to be, and I like to help out the kids.
Well, we have so much to talk about this hour, and so many things to get into more detail about. But first, I'd like to hear a piece that we've had provided for the show today. One of the goals of the Governor's Domestic Violence Initiative is to increase services for victims of domestic violence and sexual assault, including legal services. Advocates say victims need that legal help to break the cycle of domestic violence. Kids These Days contributor Jessica Cochran spoke with some of the people who helped connect victims with attorneys.
The Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault is made up of 17 member programs around the state. They provide emergency shelter, food and clothing, 24-hour crisis telephone lines, and counseling. Christine Pate says one of the biggest needs is for legal representation.
The people who come to us for assistance are those same clients who are coming into our member programs, needing help with protection order cases, needing help with child support, with spousal support, all those types of issues.
A first stop for help is the network's legal information referral line. Every other week, a lawyer answers brief questions and offers advice over the telephone. For more involved cases, the project connects victims with volunteer attorneys.
We hear a lot about why people don't leave domestic violence relationships. They've been told that if they leave, that the violence will get worse, and we know that separation is the highest time of lethality. They've been told that if they leave, that they won't have their children because the other side will get custody. They've been told that if they leave, they won't be able to make it on their own because, you know, they don't work and they don't have any income. And those are all really frightening obstacles for people. And so having an attorney can help you to get that stuff. You can get a protection order that keeps you safe. You can get a custody order that gives you, you know, custody of your kids with a safe and enforceable visitation arrangement. You can get spousal support, hopefully, and child support so that you can become economically self-sufficient. But if you don't have access to an attorney, then all those things become much more difficult.
The project serves about 110 clients a year with 90 volunteer attorneys and one staff attorney. But Pate says they can't serve everyone who qualifies for help. About 100 people were turned away last year.
It's heartbreaking. People have no assistance, and it's a heartbreaking situation. I mean, I firmly believe that everyone who goes through the family law process, there are vital fundamental rights involved in terms of access to your children, and I think that everyone should have a right to an attorney in those situations, but we don't have that recognized yet in our state or in our nation, and so there are people every day going into family court who are going unrepresented and facing the loss of their children without an attorney.
To try to meet the need and turn away fewer people, the network, the state, and other legal advocates have been trying to attract more volunteer attorneys. The network provides an annual training conference, free to lawyers who volunteer more than 20 hours a year, and will link up lawyers who are new to family law with a mentor who can help them through a case. Attorney General Dan Sullivan says the goal is to make sure no victim of domestic violence or sexual assault goes without legal representation, and he thinks the state can make that goal within the next few years, in part because of the interest shown by attorneys at two pro bono summits held in Anchorage and Juneau earlier this year. A third is scheduled for Fairbanks this month.
Attorneys who have done this kind of work, talking about how they fit it into their practice. The Alaska Bar and the network talk about how they can provide training to attorneys, because let's face it, most attorneys, myself included, don't have a lot of background in family law. And also have testimonials from victims who have received pro bono legal services. And they demonstrate to the audience just how important the services of one attorney can be in literally, in some cases, helping save lives.
One of the goals of the summit in Fairbanks is to figure out how to make sure victims in rural areas can access legal assistance. Sullivan says technology can help with distance delivery of legal services, or maybe having attorneys travel more from hubs like Fairbanks. Now, victims in villages usually have to travel to a hub like Kotzebue or Bethel to get much assistance. Tanya Kirk is an advocate in Noatak, a community of 500, 55 miles north of Kotzebue. She says they have local safe houses where people can go while they wait to go to Kotzebue for more services. A legal advocate in Kotzebue can help people get protective orders by telephone if necessary. But Kirk says many people don't even know that that's an option.
I've heard from, you know, some residents out there that, yes, I do have, I don't want this person near me, I'm afraid for my life, and they'll take it to the next level, and that next level is to get a protective order to ensure their safety. I believe more people don't know about it, though, and should know about it.
Kirk says a lot of abuse still goes unreported in her village, though it is improving. People are aware that there are legal consequences for domestic violence and assault. She's seen in NOATAC that it makes a big difference when there is a VPSO on the job.
See, I've been on for a year with this job, and probably a good third of the year we've had a VPSO in place, so we did see an increase of arrests being made and reports because of that presence and because he's proactive.
Kirk says hopefully over time people will keep feeling more comfortable speaking out and seeking out the help they need, legal or otherwise. I'm Jessica Cochran.
And this is Kids These Days. Katie Tipas, as Jessica Cochran just reported, there can really be a lot on the line for families and for people who are in need of legal services, like she just described. How is that outlook sort of changing? Are there changes in the works under this new initiative to try to help mitigate some of the problems that we have with domestic violence and sexual assault in this state?
As far as the legal advocacy services go, under the initiative, we are funding through the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault part of the legal advocacy pro bono project. So the training that brings attorneys together to get their interest and also develop expertise in those things. So we are recognizing that the state does have ownership in providing for that. I also applaud the Attorney General, Dan Sullivan, for actively going out and hosting events to seek people to join in providing this specific service. So it is very, very needed. It does reduce the rates of victimization to have access to those services. And that also can increase economic independence too, which is very, very important. The other thing that the initiative is doing specific to law enforcement and access to law enforcement services across the state, but most specifically rural Alaska, is under the initiative, the goal is 15 new VPSOs per year for 10 years.
And we should state that a VPSO is a Village Safety Patrol Officer. Is that?
VPSO stands for Village Public Safety Officer.
Oh, okay.
And so the initiative last year had 15 positions underneath it, and then this year and all the following years we'll ask for another 10 to communities that want those positions and are ready for them. The other thing that we've recognized in terms of retaining VPSOs, there are significant issues in rural Alaska with housing and also office space. So we've worked with the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation to provide funds to communities for that. So this year we awarded, the Housing Finance Corporation awarded funds to three communities for VPSO housing, which will help. We've also increased VPSO pay and provided cost of living increases. So with those efforts, we really see people willing to step up and provide law enforcement services.
And so when there's a VPSO in a community, that means that community and the people who live in that community are at less risk, or at least they have more of an avenue to go forward with legal?
I would say absolutely. When you look at causes of domestic violence or root causes, as we say, there's a lot of discussion about what they truly are. But one thing you can look at is people do deserve access to services. And so we have to make certain that we have some equality across the state. So providing law enforcement in the community is part of that. Providing legal advocacy services is another part. And the woman from NOATAC mentioned that sometimes people aren't aware of what those services are. And so most people would know if there's a law enforcement officer in their community, but they might not know where they can go for legal representation. So it's programs like yours are extremely important to getting the message out and letting people know these are the numbers to call. There are people who want to help you. And also ask their community to engage as well.
And when you mention numbers, one thing that Kids These Days will do for this program is to make sure that we link to organizations where that information is available, or that we make that information available from our website at kidsthesedays.org. And so, Katie Tipas, I'm wondering also, when you talk about that education component, to let people know that there are resources, and maybe Cindy Stanton, you could speak to this too. So I'm wondering, if I am a person who finds myself in a situation where I need some help, my home has become a place where violence is, I'm afraid maybe my child is being abused in some way. What is that first step? What does somebody do?
I think it depends on the victim. Some victims don't feel safe or not safe to directly report to law enforcement. They've been threatened if they reported, and they should take those threats very seriously. So calling 911 is one option. I think talking to a healthcare provider about those issues is another option. Calling their local domestic violence or sexual assault program. I would also hope that simply confiding in a friend or a mentor or a coworker would allow that victim to access to services. And what I mean by that is everybody across Alaska should know what their local resources are. So if I ask somebody, you know, how are you? And they say not well, I should ask them, what do you mean by that? And how can I help? But I also have to know what those resources are. So we really do need to get the word out that we do have resources in Alaska. There are 1-800 numbers. And then I'll defer to Cindy for some other answers.
Cindy Stanton, yeah, what is your what would your advice be?
Well, and I agree and would echo all of what Katie said, but I would also make sure that there are people that are mandated reporters out there. So I deal mostly with children who might report to a school teacher, a nurse, a counselor, and those people are all mandated by state law to report to the Office of Children's Services. Locally, I believe that happens a lot. I don't find that we are missing out on a lot of that. Out in the rural areas, we might be missing the boat a little bit on that, but if you have somebody, even a healthcare provider, those people are all mandated to report. And the Office of Children's Services, in turn, reports that information to law enforcement as well. So that's another good way to get some resources.
Mm-hmm. Katie?
And one other thing I think is really important, when victims disclose to people, it's extremely important that they're believed and not judged and not blamed. They often feel a significant amount of shame. And one important thing that I always like to stress when we're talking about listening to victims, and as I like to call it, somewhat bearing witness, is that if we believe them and demonstrate we believe them, we actually, by doing that, reduce their psychological trauma. So when we blame victims, we actually increase their psychological trauma. So the simple act of saying, thank you for sharing, I believe you, how can I help, will impact them greatly over their lifespan.
And this is Cindy. I like to echo that. Extremely with children, how a person reacts, a lot of time the shock and will cause the child to feel shame. And so if, even though it might be a horrific thing that's happening to them, just letting them know, I understand, I'm going to get to the people that are going to be the right ones to help you.
Ladies, let's talk a little bit about Alaska. There are just some staggering numbers that go along in association with our state, that a woman here is 2.5 times more likely to be the victim of sexual assault, for one, and the children are at greater risk here than in other places. I'm an Alaskan. I have a hard time knowing that about our state. I have a hard time thinking that can be happening here, and I would love for each of you guys to explain to me a little bit about what's going on. Why is this happening?
This is Cindy, and I believe part of the reason our numbers are a lot higher than other states is the education, getting the word out. We've got, at least locally in Anchorage, and I know in other areas, we have star advocates standing together against rape that go out into the schools and give children, that's where we get a majority of our disclosures from children about abuse in their homes. So I think that education is really a way to get the disclosures, and that in turn makes our numbers seem high. I don't know that we are really any different from other places throughout the country, because I know there's sexual and physical abuse throughout the nation.
So you're saying that our numbers might be high because we have good educational outreach and efforts, and so therefore we have higher rates of disclosure?
That is my belief, and kind of a scenario which kind of really brought that home to me was last year, the STAR advocates, they lost one of the instructors that goes into the schools. The numbers of reports that I received on sexual abuse and physical abuse of children almost dropped in half. This year they're back out. I believe they have two instructors again, and our numbers are, we're still getting those calls in, almost double of what we had last year. So
all because of an individual, it sounds like. Not that one person, but that was that one position.
Exactly.
Wow.
Funding last year, and I don't know how they got the funding this year, but I believe they have more educators in the school. And that's my belief.
Katie Tepaz?
I think that as a state, we're just beginning to understand the breadth of the issue, and we're able to really start understanding it because of recent research that's been done. Both APD and the Alaska State Troopers partnered with University of Alaska's Justice Center, and specifically Dr. Andre Rosé, to look at reports of domestic violence, sexual assault, child sexual abuse. That data really helped frame what we were actually missing. And what I mean by that is we had data on reports to law enforcement, but we know a lot of people don't report. Mm-hmm. So we were able to talk with folks in Juneau, in the legislature, in government, and say we're missing data. And what we don't know is the true rates of victimization, or I should say what we didn't know was the true rates of victimization. And when I use that word, I mean reported and non-reported.
And it's the combination of
those. It's the combination of both. So victimization rates, when we use that term, really means what's been reported to law enforcement and not reported. What we've always known, specific to sexual violence, is the UCR, Uniform Crime Report rate, which is the 2.5% that you mentioned. But that's a very, very narrow measure. And I'd really like to point out that that measure does not include a greater majority of the crimes, sexual crimes committed against children. So we use that measure, but it's only for adults and it's only in a narrow capacity. So it was, while the best we had, again, imperfect. So the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault partnered with the University of Alaska's Justice Center to conduct, for the first time ever, a statewide victimization survey. That survey was released last week. And those results were staggering. We actually believe those to be conservative estimates. And the reason for that is they surveyed adult women in Alaska, and specifically adult women in Alaska who were English speaking. So right there, you're eliminating a certain population of women. They also didn't survey women who were incarcerated. So both those populations, we might anticipate to see actually higher rates of victimization. So we're starting to see that. But again, those were surveys of adult women. They weren't surveys specifically of children.
And that survey was called the 2010 Alaska Victimization Survey, correct?
That is correct.
And we'll be linking to that from our website at kidsthesedays.org as well. And as I read through that survey, I also noticed that these are also women who have a listed home telephone number or cell phone number, correct?
Landline or cell phone. So some persons who might not have the economic resources have that, absolutely. I think you mentioned it before that when we hear this data, we often feel disbelief that this can't be my state. And I really encourage all Alaskans to open up their minds to the fact that these data are accurate. I think we as people tend to want to disbelieve or expel from our minds that this can't happen because it's too horrific to believe.
Yeah, I feel that happening. When I look at these numbers, I just feel myself saying, I can't listen to that. I can't.
And that's always my concern is that, and I'm certain it would be Cindy Stanton's concern and everybody else who works in the field, that we really do need the public to open up and understand that we have these high levels because until we have that acknowledgement, we're not going to move forward. And so that's the breaking of the silence and accepting it, but accepting it in a manner that will allow us to positively move forward.
And we're talking about one of the numbers that I think we're referring to here is from this Alaska Victimization Survey. The number that's been in the headlines a lot has been this 58.6% of the women surveyed say that they have at least once in their lifetime experienced intimate partner or sexual violence.
Correct, or both. So it'd be intimate partner violence, sexual violence, or both. And that's the composite measure of the two separate measures. There's one for intimate partner violence over a lifetime, and there's also one for sexual violence throughout the lifetime. So that's the composite of both of those. So as people go places, so for example, I travel a lot. I sit on a plane. I now can look around and say half the women on this plane by this survey have experienced intimate partner or sexual violence or both. Mm-hmm. Or there's three of us in this room, so you know we can do the math.
Right. So this new initiative, you say that you've alluded to there being a positive part of this. So tell me about that. What is the positive part of this new initiative toward this issue?
I think the positive part, there's several positive parts. One is that we are breaking the silence. So the governor has spoken about his family history with domestic violence. We've had other leaders within the state do the same thing. So it's now becoming acceptable to talk about it. You don't have to hide in shame. That's huge. Mm-hmm. I think the other part that is enormous is we're starting to recognize the importance of primary prevention, which is really the changing of social norms. So law enforcement, their interactions, generally speaking, are they get a case, so something has happened, and they're trying to stop something from happening again, which is significantly important. I don't want to diminish that. But primary prevention really is the changing of social norms. That is going to be one of the tipping points in terms of us moving forward. That, along with the legal advocacy that we talked about, economic stuff, and we always, again, have to have the law enforcement involvement in those things. So the primary prevention is truly going to be key, and that's getting into the schools.
Mm-hmm. I do want to talk much more about primary prevention and prevention, but first I want to remind people that this is Kids These Days, and I'm your host, Shanna Sheehy, and today I'm joined by Katie Tipas and Cindy Stanton in the studio. And I'd like to share a comment that I received recently. Ginger Baim is the executive director of SAFE in Dillingham. That's Safe and Fear-Free Environment, an organization that provides services that enhance safety and promote nonviolence for Bristol Bay residents. She's been doing this work in Dillingham for 20 years. But began her violence prevention advocacy work in Fairbanks as many as 35 years ago. So Kids These Days wondered what someone with her experience might make about recent efforts to stem interpersonal violence in the state. Baim says she thinks men on the whole have been disenfranchised by the small percentage of them who actually do abuse women and children. And she told me why she thinks there's momentum behind the things that are going on currently in Alaska.
The thing that resonates with me with the Choose Respect campaign is it is engaging men in the work to end violence. And it's not engaging agencies. It's not engaging people who are paid to care, you know, or professionals. It's saying the average father, grandfather, husband, brother, and son, you need to step up to the plate. You need to teach what you know and be that role model for the men and boys in your life. And that's why that this one is important. That's why it's different. Mm-hmm. It gives a positive leadership role in men to lead us, other men and boys and their family by example, into a different kind of world where this kind of behavior doesn't exist.
Do you think that this will be successful in your community in Dillingham?
Yes, I do. It's just, it takes a long time, and it's not going to be successful unless it has that momentum. The movement to end violence has been growing and growing, and a lot of more people are on board with it. There's a lot more resources and assistance for and generally, I think the population as a whole and certainly responders are much more knowledgeable about the issues than there used to be. All of this is positive, but boy, you know, you pack 5 miles in and you're going to have to pack 5 miles out. It took us a long time to get to this place, and it seems excruciatingly slow, particularly when you're experiencing these things in your life, or you're someone like me that, you know, on average week, it makes you weep, the kinds of things that you see that human beings are going through that they should never have to go through. And I'm impatient. You know, but I do know what I have sensed here and what I've really sensed with the governor's initiative is that there is a momentum building, and that momentum could be the tipping point. That could bring us to that tipping point where enough of us are finally saying, okay, enough, enough.
That was Ginger Baim, the executive director of SAFE in Dillingham. Well, Cindy Stanton, you work in the police department here in Anchorage. Ginger Baim was just talking about momentum. What do you think about that?
I think it sounds great. I'd be thrilled if there were some men that really reached out and gave their life experiences to youth. I see a lot of children. I just want to let you know, I have 8 detectives in my unit, and on an average each year they get assigned 60 cases. And that's of physical abuse, sexual abuse, and different kidnapping and homicides, baby homicides. And that's domestic violence. I think sometimes people kind of forget about the children. Mm-hmm. I've seen a lot of these programs forget about the children and the violence that happens to them as domestic violence. So I think it would be great if we could get some expansion of the good quality role model males. Unfortunately, a good percentage of the suspects are males, and we do have female suspects, but better role models as males would be great.
And Katie Tapos, you had mentioned something before we heard from Ginger Beam as well about a culture change, and that this new initiative and Choose Respect is what I think it's being called. Is that right? Is it about a culture change in part?
Absolutely. But when I use the term culture, when we talk about culture as it relates to the initiative, I think it's really important that we're not specifically talking about ethnic culture.
Correct.
So I'd like to make that point.
So we're talking about the greater culture that we all find ourselves in.
The greater social culture. Last week, I was presenting the DV Awareness Month proclamation, and I asked the group, how many of you in the audience here still feel like we have a societal culture of blaming victims, be it adults, children? And almost everybody in the room raised their hand. And that's going to be one of our greatest challenges in moving forward, is ending that victim blaming. And I think we get there not by solely having one particular entity involved in the movement. So we do have to engage men. And I also think that we have to recognize that while the greater majority of the perpetrators against children, against women, and even against men are men, that we have a huge number of men who are very positive and healthy. So when we go back and look at those numbers regarding the Alaska Victimization Survey, they don't mean that 47% of women have been experienced intimate partner violence over a lifetime. That means that 47% of men. That's not what those data mean. So I think it's also important that we do recognize and honor men who are making an effort, taking a step forward. We do need more men to be engaged. I think what I like to say is women need to invite men into the movement, and at the same time, men need to ask and to say, I want to help. How can I help? What can I do? I need to be there.
Well, we're going to talk more about primary prevention, about prevention programs, about this movement, and about how everyone can get involved. I'd like to remind people that this is Kids These Days on this listener-supported station, where we talk about issues that affect Alaskans, our children, our families, and communities. We'll be back in the next half of the program to continue this conversation with Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Response Coordinator Katie Tapos and Anchorage Police Department Sergeant Cindy Stanton. We'll also hear about one new prevention campaign aimed at Alaska's youth. We'll be back after this break. What do you want to be when you grow up? Do you remember being asked that very question? Do you ask it to the kids in your life now? Well, why do we do that? What's the reason behind our tendency to let kids dream big when it comes to their futures? Tune in for some answers next time on Kids These Days. Hi, I'm Shanna Sheehy, host of Kids These Days, and on our next program, we'll talk with an anthropologist and a psychologist about the cultural and psychological implications of how we think about what we'll be and do when we grow up. We'll also explore what it's like for grown-ups when one career ends and another begins. What resources are there for people, and what kind of counsel can you get if you need it?
That and more next time on Kids These Days. That's Tuesdays at 2 and again at 7, right here on KSKA. You're listening to Kids These Days on this listener-supported station. Today, we're learning about Alaska's epidemic of domestic violence and sexual assault and how it affects ourselves, our children, our families. Call us to let us know if you have something to share. Today's calls are not live, but you can leave a recorded message. Katie Tipas and Cindy Stanton are with me in the studio today, and I'm Shanna Sheehy. But first this. The Stand Up, Speak Up campaign is a statewide effort led by Alaskan teens. It's meant to promote the idea that respect for yourself and for others is an important foundation for avoiding domestic violence in personal relationships. The campaign is a joint effort between the Department of Health and Social Services, the Department of Public Safety, and the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. Kids These Days producer Sarah Gonzalez spoke with two teenagers who were involved in this campaign, as well as Lori Grassgreen, an adult who helped the teens put their positive message together.
The Stand Up, Speak Up campaign is youth-led, and it began in May 2010 as a way to reach teenagers and spread the word about respect. The ultimate goal of this media campaign is to end violence among teens while increasing respect levels as well. I'm in the studio with Beau Schirmbach. He is recently turned 20. He went to Mid Valley High School in Wasilla, and he appeared in one of the PSAs that the Stand Up, Speak Up campaign produced. Hi, Beau.
Hello.
I'm also here with Isis Taylor. She's 14, and she is a freshman at East High School. And also, she appeared in one of the PSAs for TV for the Stand Up, Speak Up campaign. Hi, Isis.
Hi.
And joining them is Lori Grassgreen. She is the prevention director at the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, otherwise known as ANDVSA, or just the network. Hi, Lori.
Hi.
Tell me about how this campaign got started.
Well, basically, this campaign started out of a youth leadership mini summit that we'd have called Lead On, and we still continue that. And there was this movement of young people that really wanted to promote respect and nonviolence in relationships and equality in communities. And so from that, we worked with that group and developed some ideas and messages over time in partnership with some other organizations across the state.
And it's primarily a TV and media campaign?
Well, there are different arms to it, but the Stand Up, Speak Up piece is commercials, posters, and some bus signs and website.
So, Beau, tell me about how you got involved in this campaign.
I was chosen by the staff at my school. They gave me a slip, and I didn't read too much into it, but when I showed up to the studio, I was actually, like, pretty excited to be a part of something, like, positive, that maybe you could, like, change the way people act in a community. Pretty exciting.
And then, Isis, how did you get involved?
My mom actually told me about it, and when I learned about this, I was pretty excited to actually join it and stuff.
So, we're talking a lot about these PSAs. Why don't we take a listen to one?
Hey, everybody, listen up.
Ending violence is up to you.
Wake up. It starts with self-respect. Never give it up.
Believe in yourself.
Keep it up. Treat others with respect. Play it up.
Be a role model.
Step up.
Bring your friends together.
Talk it up.
If your words encourage, keep it up.
Don't bring friends down.
Lift them up.
We're about respect.
Stand up.
Speak up.
So we just heard you guys doing your thing on the Stand Up, Speak Up PSA, and this is just one of two. And Beau, you, part of your role in this one, you talk about being a mentor. How is that important?
Mine was actually to be a role model.
A role model. Okay.
Basically, your actions affect the people around you. Giving off a positive vibe will set a positive vibe to the people around you. Make people make better decisions.
One of the underlying values in the Stand Up, Speak Up campaign is respect. And the goal is to end violence. So how does promoting respect among your peers help to end violence?
Showing people that they should do the right thing instead of maybe doing a violent act, like someone's having a bad day, maybe you shouldn't go and rob a bank or something like that. Maybe make a better decision.
Choose to do something nonviolent instead.
Right. Something positive.
Isis, what about you? How does having respect for yourself and for others help to prevent violence?
I think that if you respect yourself, you're actually saying, like, you're just being a role model for other people around you, and you're just, like, telling them a message just to respect themselves.
Lori, how many kids were involved in this project?
Well, in the actual commercials and on the website, there were probably around 25, probably around 50 youth overall across the state that participated in some way.
And in your experience going to high school, did you see your peers having healthy relationships for the most part? Or do you think that a lot of teens are struggling with having healthy relationships?
I thought it was a little kind of half and half of both, unhealthy and healthy.
How were the relationships unhealthy?
You walk through the hallways and you hear people maybe getting into arguments. And then the other side of it, maybe someone was bringing flowers to school or a candy gram or something like that.
Isis, what about you? Do you see the teens at your school, at East High School, having healthy relationships?
Yeah, I think it's also like half and half.
Did you guys find that kids in your school knew about this campaign?
Immediately, like right away after the commercials came out, they're like, oh, I seen your commercial. That's really awesome. Like, yeah, it's pretty cool. Did you get the message?
Did you, after you shot the PSAs and they came out, did you remain involved with the campaign, Bo?
I tried to go off on my own and maybe kind of do a lot of positive things to the people around me and for myself.
Sure, because now you're an example, because you were on TV.
Yeah.
And this campaign, the Stand Up Speak Up campaign that you were both involved in, Bo and Isis, and Lori Grassgreen, which you helped plan, do you find that that the kids in your school were maybe treating each other differently after this campaign got the word around?
In my school, they did. We had posters hanging up around the school, and during assemblies, we'd talk about it.
Lori, what was the ultimate goal of this campaign?
Well, I think the ultimate goal was to create a space for youth to have a voice about things they care about. And a lot of youth around the state want to create change and promote respect and live in communities that are safe and healthy and have healthy relationships. And this was a chance to talk about it.
That's great. So what's next for the campaign?
Phase two.
What's phase two?
Well, we're in the process of deciding that, but we'll be working with the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault and Department of Health and Social Services.
Excellent. And Isis, will you be involved in phase two?
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you, Bo? Are you too old now, or can you?
I think I'm too old. I would like to be a part of it, and I believe that I still am, like, on my own little platform, kind of doing my own thing, making a positive effort.
So you can go off and do your own thing now and spread the word.
Perhaps he can be a consultant.
Yeah. You can come back and be a role model.
I'll call Bo and ask for suggestions.
That's Kids These Days producer Sarah Gonzalez speaking with Lori Grassgreen, Bo Schermbach, and Isis Taylor. Grassgreen is the prevention director at the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. Schermbach is a graduate of Mid Valley High School, and Isis Taylor is a freshman at East High School. Both are involved in the Stand Up Speak Up campaign. You can learn more about Stand Up Speak Up and link to the PSAs we've just heard by visiting our website at kidsthesedays.org. Again, this is Kids These Days, and I'm Shanna Sheehy, and I'm here with Katie Tipas and Sergeant Cindy Stanton. Cindy Stanton, in your work with the police department, do you feel like public awareness has changed? Or what would your impression of how aware the public is of how to prevent these things or what to do to stave off this kind of thing is within our community?
I believe that the public isn't aware. And oftentimes, I believe the public doesn't want to be aware that this type of stuff happens. We had a program with one of the news stations a few years back when I first became the supervisor of this unit. And it was a weekly program. Each week, I gave them a different suspect that had committed a crime against a child. And they didn't, I think we did it for 3 weeks. And the first couple of weeks, the suspects were people that maybe you would be able to say, oh, yes, that's a suspect. The third week, it was a regular business guy, could have been your next door neighbor. And we got so many, the news channel got so many complaints that they then decided to stop the program, which in my mind, that to me showed that, you know, people just want to believe that there's creepy guys out there that they can tell who are bad, and they aren't around those type of people. The education, all parents need to know, you know, it's not just stranger danger, and that has to change. People have to talk to their kids from the beginning. As they're reading them books, there's books out there telling children, you know, respect yourself, and nobody's allowed to touch you or to hurt you in any manner, and who the right people are to tell a trusted adult. And those conversations have to start young and continue throughout. Nowadays, with computers and the internet, I'm just seeing so many victims that they really shouldn't have been able to be victims, because their parents are keeping them at home and they're keeping track of them. And next thing you know, they didn't realize they were on the internet communicating with somebody who's a predator. Maybe the kid is giving false information, saying they're a little bit older and they're engaging into these conversations. And so parents really need to be aware, and they need to be aware that it can happen to you. It can happen to anybody's child. I've had so many cases where parents come in just devastated because they didn't think it could happen to them. And everybody needs to wake up to the fact that it can happen to all of us and our children.
So how does that parent who might think that it can't happen to them, where are the resources for, you know, how do you even know what kind of conversation to be having with your child when you're reading a book, for example? How do you find out how best to counsel your kid from the very beginning to alleviate some of these potential risks?
And if we're talking about from the very beginning, a lot of the hospitals have programs and information. The schools, once your kids are getting to school, have information, they have programs, and you can ask, and they'll provide what good books to read. And
this is for the parent. They provide it to the parent.
Yes, okay. Yeah. As well as in the Anchorage School District, each year they're required to give out a class about how personal safety, and that's why the STAR advocates oftentimes get into the classrooms. So they can call the police department and get forwarded to me, and I can give them ideas on places to go. We have a child advocacy center in our city, the Alaska Cares, that's where we take children to have them interviewed. And a lot of times when there's a non-law enforcement type case, those families are referred to Alaska Cares, and they get a lot of resources for counseling if they're having children with some issues but really haven't been abused, but they want to make sure that they're well-educated. A lot of schools, hospitals when you're first having your child, and police department.
What kind of resources might there be for a child who has experienced sexual assault or violence of some kind and is trying to heal? What kinds of resources are there for children in our community and in our state for that?
Well, I know in Anchorage, we have Standing Together Against Rape, and they come to every one of the cases that we have at Alaska Cares and are there for support for the family as well as the child. Katie can probably talk to other resources.
Well, Alaska really is very, very progressive. So again, you know, Cindy Stanton mentioned, you know, what's happening in Anchorage, and often people perceive things to be Anchorage-centric, and I'm not trying to use that in a negative term, but we do have a lot of resources statewide. So there are close to or approximately 20 domestic violence and sexual assault programs around the state to provide services for victims and survivors and their family members. And so I would encourage everybody that if they want to know what the resource is in their community, to start there first. And then obviously you have the school systems. We also have, and Cindy mentioned, the child advocacy centers, known as CACs. That is a significant resource in terms of not just solely evaluation of a child who's experienced abuse, be it physical or sexual, but it's also a resource for families. They have tons of literature. They have a conference coming up in November, the Child Maltreatment Conference. I encourage people who are interested in that to look up the Alaska Children's Alliance and see if there's anything that interests them and they can attend. It is a phenomenal lineup of people this year, national folks, as well as our local experts across the state. So there's tons of resources. The Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, and again, the council, people can call them. And as Cindy said, you know, you can call the police department, you can call me. We can put you in contact with somebody if you have a question.
And this is Katie Tipas, just to like to remind people. And she is the response coordinator for the Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault and the governor's new initiative in that area. How long is it going to take to change the culture that must in some way help this happen, allow this to happen? Cindy Stanton, yeah. How long does that take?
It's going to take a long time. It's going to take, I don't know, I guess it could take years. It's all going to depend on how people respond to it and if we can get the people of Alaska on board and involved. If we can't get people involved, if we can't get the men that are the good role models to step up, then really it's not really going to go anywhere. So really it's the community that's going to decide how long this is going to take. If people continue to turn the channel when there's bad news, or if the TV and newspaper and radios decide not to tell about the type of incidents that are occurring in our city, and we want to keep focusing. You know, when I worked in the community councils, one of the biggest complaints was speeders and noise in neighborhoods, and it was very hard for me, having come from working in the Crimes Against Children unit for 4 years, and oftentimes I've tried to educate them on, here's the other things that are going on in your city. Unfortunately, until these kind of crimes happen to them or even somebody really close to them, people don't want to know about them. So it's going to have to be changes in people and what they want to do. And from what I've seen, there's not always a lot of people willing to step up to help the community as a whole. So that's going to be our determinant in my mind of how long this is going to take.
How about you, Katie Tipas? Do you have any predictions for how long this kind of fundamental change might take?
I have great hope and faith that we will get there. I absolutely agree with Sergeant Stanton that this has to start with communities and individuals. Both Sergeant Stanton and I work for government entities, and the government does have ownership, but the only way we are going to make progress is if we have individuals and communities engaged at a different level. So recognizing ownership across the board, that will be the ultimate, I guess, tipping point, is with that engagement. I would also, though, caution people who are listening that as we progress with the initiative, we probably are going to see an increase in reporting. So we will see an increase in our numbers. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's getting worse. It just might mean we have more people reporting because we're out there doing primary prevention. We're asking for people to break the silence. We're asking for people to be really good citizens and stewards of Alaska and ask people, how are you? Are you okay? What can I do for you? So I do think that we're going to probably see an increase, but that doesn't mean it's worse. We actually have people who are accessing services. So I also encourage everybody just to individually make a pledge to talk to people around you and ask them if they're okay, ask them if they've been victimized. But when you do that, you have to be prepared to listen and to be able to spend time. And in doing that, I think that people will be, their eyes will be open, their ears will be open, their hearts will be opened, that this is happening across the board. And as Cindy said, it's not stranger danger. You know, we have children, women, elders, men who are being victimized, and they need our help.
What might you, both of you, say to, say, a victim who says, choose respect? I've heard stuff like that before. What's it really going to do for me?
I would say that I hear you, because I have been to, and I know Sergeant Stanton has, we've been at the same meetings where we meet and we talk and we plan and we don't have a significant amount of action afterwards. There is now a significant amount of action. There is a groundswell. We've had, you know, a perfect storm, so to speak, last legislative session with new funding, new players at the table, people who are breaking the silence. So choose respect is not just about choosing individual respect, but it really is showing respect to fellow Alaskans. And so I do think it's more than words. It's more than deeds. It really is taking a stand. I would also say that we've got a long way to go. And I don't want to say be patient, because in many regards, we should never have to say that to a victim of be patient, we're trying to get there. But I do want them to continue, in terms of victims, to continue to voice what their concerns are, because their voice should drive this. And like I said, everything we do should be victim-centered. So if a victim says to me, choose respect, that means nothing to me, then my response back is, what would you like to hear? What do you need? Please tell me, and I'll try my best to make that happen.
How about you, Sergeant Cindy Stanton? How would you respond to someone who challenged this idea in that way?
I would say you need to choose respect as well. And, you know, it starts with individuals. It doesn't have to just start. We're not just talking about the suspects and the men here. We're talking about you, too. So I want you to step up, and I want you to be a part of it, too. And in that, they can help show whatever else they're looking for or whatever else they think is going to work. I think it's really important to engage those people as well. I don't know how they feel, how to do what they need if they're not telling me. We seem a lot of times to have people trying to have answers that aren't in the situation. So the people who are actually having those problems and having those scenarios also has to choose respect and help us out too.
Well, ladies, I want to thank both of you so much for your time and for being here today on Kids These Days. I've been speaking with Sergeant Cindy Stanton of the Anchorage Police Department and the state's Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Response Coordinator, Katie Tapas. She joined us today. Thanks both of you ladies for being here. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening and being a part of the Kids These Days community. If you have something to say about today's show, please let us know. Call us and leave a message at 1-888-KTD-RADIO. That's 888-583-7234. Or send a message to mail at kidsthesedays.org. This discussion begins here. Be a part of its continuation online. Kids These Days is produced by Sarah Gonzalez. Sarah Gonzalez contributed to today's show, was our technical operator today, and is the brains behind everything you see and experience at kidsthesedays.org. We also had help this hour from Kids These Days regular contributor, Jessica Cochran. Mind Over Matthew composed all of our music today. I'm Shanna Sheehy, host of Kids These Days. See you again next week.
The ideas, opinions, and commentary you hear on Kids These Days are those of the host, guests, and contributors, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of its funders or broadcast partners. The Content Producers Guild is solely responsible for what you hear on this program. Kids These Days is made possible by a generous grant from the Association of Alaska School Boards and its Initiative for Community Engagement. Kids These Days is produced in partnership with KSKA, KRUA, and the UAA Department of Journalism and Public Communications.